Yes, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the possibility to come to this interesting program, and to the organizers of the seminar to about inviting me to give a seminar about. Well, it's maybe I am here on the SLE program, so and I am giving a talk about string theory, so maybe I should give a little explanation. Over the last few years, I was interested, and I am still interested in disordered systems in low dimensions, in two dimensions, in special and. I worked on problems related to this, conformal field theories which are associated to disordered systems, non-unitary conformal field theories with logarithmic operators, and also on superspin chains which were supposed to help to give a solution to some long-standing problems like the transition between plateaus in the integer quantum Hall effect. So the people working on these subjects are using nonlinear sigma models on supergroup manifolds and superspin chains. So my talk will be mainly about this kind of structure, so nonlinear sigma models on super manifolds and super spin chains. But the physics behind this is not well. It's the problem is different. But it is a different well. It is a very challenging problem, and I think this methods of integrability may help to make some progress in this difficult problem. So, I am not going to talk too much about my own work, but in fact the main well, I will try to explain to talk about two papers which appeared 2 weeks ago. And which I think made a major step in trying to find the solution to proof to the Maldacena's conjecture, and so one of these papers. is concerned with for loop calculation in n equals 4 super Young-Mills theory, and the other paper by Beisertet and Staudacher is the, devoted to the integrability in ADS-CFT. But they are very very closely related, so I will try to explain in which sense and what is the progress. So I think we are on the right way to prove the ADS-CFT conjecture, and these two works bring a very important contribution to this. So as the subject is non-standard and the techniques are non-standard, I will try to give a brief introduction to this subject. The ADS-CFT conjecture, which was put forward by Maldacena in at the end of 90s, is a precise example of gauge string correspondence. So it gives a precise example of precise formulation of the ideas which are which appear in modern physics so in the 70s, 80s, which relate gauge theories to string theory. So this precise correspondence is between the maximally supersymmetric Young-Mills theory in four dimensions and the 2B string theory on the ADS 5 crosses 5 manifold. I don't know if there is something to point on the...
I think it's not. There's a stick.
Ah, where is it?
I'll go and get a pointer, and if you find one first, that's no problem.
Ah, there you go. Okay, so the correspondence gives a precise link between the string theory parameters, so the string coupling constant relates to the coupling constant of Young-Mills theory. The radius of this curved space is related to the to the number of colors in the of the gauge theory to the string tension. So the integrability is related to the planar limit of the n equals 4 super Young-Mills. So I am going to stick to this special limit. The coupling constant in this case is the Toft coupling constant, which is the combination which is kept constant while the number of colors of the gauge group goes to infinity. What about the n equals 4 gauge theory? It is a very special theory because it is maximally supersymmetric in four dimensions, and it is conformal. The beta function equals to zero, so there is a conformal invariance. The conformal group in four dimensions is SO24, so you have this symmetry. You have the four supersymmetries, which are mixed by this R symmetry operations. Also, there is a supersymmetry which combines all these symmetries in a big group, which is a supergroup, which is PSL. 2,2/4. So, for the people who work in disorder system, this kind of groups are very familiar because they appear often in the effective field theories which are used in this domain.
So, 2-2 like a 4, is it the Euclidean, or the Euclidean Lorentz 4?
Which?
In this condensed matter, do you get like PSL 4-4?
No, 2,24, and this is because you introduced, let's say you are studying fermions in two dimensions, Dirac fermions. You want to put disorder, you want to average over disorder, then you have to introduce counter part of these fermions, which are bosons, to remove the partition function which appears. So when you introduce the bosons, you end up with this non-compact. So it's really very very close to this. So I don't know if finding a solution to this problem will help to find the solution of the transition in the integer quantum Hall effect, but well, we'll see. Okay, so the fundamental fields, I will need them in the following. The fundamental fields of the N equals 4 gauge theory are the well, the gauge gauge fields, six scalar bosons, four fermions, which are all of the, them are n by n matrices, where the number the number of color n will be sent to infinity. And well, out of these fundamental fields, you can construct all the local operators in the gauge theory. You take traces of the SUN group of products of all these fundamental fields. And under the correspondence, this object should map to one string state in string theory. Also, there are anomalous dimensions mapped to the energy spectrum of the strings, and also the other quantities like the R charges map to angular momenta in GI. So I forgot to mention that. Well, these are the symmetries of the N equals 4 gauge theory, but for example, SO6 is also the isometric group of the sphere in ADS5 cross S5, and this is the group of isometry of the hyperboloid of the ADS5 part. So you have when you want to check the correspondence, the first thing is you look at the global symmetries, the geometry. So the next thing which was done was to look at the states which are protected by supersymmetry, which do not get modified from one side of the other of the correspondence. So, in fact, what is very difficult, the thing which is very difficult to, which makes things very, very difficult is that the correspondence is between small coupling and large coupling. What you can compute in gauge theory, it's very hard to compute in string theory, and vice versa. So you can compute first the things which do not modify between the two regimes, but eventually you want to check everything. So you have to devise a way to compare things on the two sides. And in this sense, a very important step was made. Was done by Bernstein, Maldacena, and Nastase in 2002, and they understood that there is a regime where you can construct a small parameters, a small parameter of, out of lambda, the coupling constant, well, which has to go to infinity in if you want to compute things in string theory. I think I. Yeah. No. Wait. That's fine. Okay. Okay. So you can construct this small parameter out of the large parameter lambda, and well, compute things which are close to this. Well, to look at the states which are close to this VPS states, and compare them with what you can compute in the perturbative gauge theory where lambda is small. So this made possible more sophisticated comparison between string and gauge theory, and Well, shortly after this this work, people understood that there are structures which can be exploited to get still more information about the correspondence by using the integrable structures which, of the two theories. So in the gauge theory, the integrable structures were discovered first by Minahan and Zarembo in 2002. And on the gauge, on the string theory side, one of the important steps on unveiling integrable structures in the sigma model was done by Joe and his collaborators. So this is the I will try to present the what happened since this this work was done until the present day, how these ideas evolved in, and how far we can go with exploiting integrability. So what we can start to hope is that it will be possible to have a bijection between the two theories, and in particular, we hope that it is possible to determine completely the spectrum of anomalous dimensions at any coupling constant. So not only in perturbation theory, but just as functions of the coupling constant. And in the same time, we'll have a quantization of the string in a curved black background with fluxes and everything, which is both are very difficult problems. Sorry.
What is L?
L. Well, it's if you want, yes, it's the R charge of these states, and well, it will appear later. So, let me explain how the spin chains appear in this setting. So, how to reformulate the gauge theory, the problem of computing anomalous dimensions in gauge theory as a spin chain problem. So, I said that the fundamental fields are the bosons, fermions, and also the gauge fields which appear with the covariant derivatives. So out of these words, out of these letters, you construct words. So you construct local operators, which are words written out of these letters. And out of these letters, you construct states. You have states in all these letters are states in representations of this group. So to give a simple example, which is related to SU2, if you take only these two combinations of bosons, you put them in a so you make a trace of them. So the trace is symmetry by cyclical permutation. So you put them on a one-dimensional chain, and you close the chain. And now you want to know how these operators transform. So you call this z letter, you call it spin up. The x letter is called spin down, and then you have this spin chain state. So you want to know how the dilatation operator acts on this state, so how this operator transforms under a dilatation. And to have an answer, you have to resort to perturbation theory to know how the dilatation operator can be written in perturbation theory. So you have to write Feynman diagrams. Because you are in the planar limit, these diagrams have to be planar, so the lines will connect nearby strings, like this, nearby strands. And what you if you look how the string states, these states transform under the when you consider this Feynman diagram, you see that the final states are just permutation. In this case, these are just permutation of the initial states. And I am going to mention about to mention subsectors of the of this group. The meaning of this subsector is that if you start with some, for example, here you start only with these two complex bosons, the diagrammatic is such that you never can obtain here something else than Z or X. So in this way, you can identify several subsectors, which are SU2, SL2, SU11, and others. So to each of this sector you associate, you have some spin chain. Sometimes you find spin chains which are already studied in the literature. Sometimes they are completely new. For example, this sector is non-compact. This sector corresponds to super spin chains. This sector has a feature which was never appeared in condensed matter theory, in the sense that this spin chains do not have a fixed length. You can modify the length of the chain. Yes.
The question: are these spin chains anti-ferromagnetic or ferromagnetic?
In principle, they are ferromagnetic, but but you have to know that on the other side of the correspondence, you will get sigma models, you will get field theories which contain particles and holes. So, in some sense, somewhere you have also the anti-ferromagnetic spin chain. In fact, the correspondence is not about low energy sector of spin chain with sigma model. It's about all the space of states on one side with all the space of states on the other side, including the anti-ferromagnetic states and whatever. So this is more difficult than what we know in condensed matter theory, where we usually look at the low energy sector. Okay, so you get spin chains. Are they integrable? So the answer is yes, in some cases. So the Minahan and Zarembo noticed that they were integrable at one loop order. In fact, the first mention about integrability in the context of superengagement theory was made by Lipatov in a very little known paper from 1998. But really, the paper which started this subject in ADS-CFT was the paper of Minahan and Zarembo. So if you restrict only at the SU2 sector of this SO6, you get this operator. So the P is a permutation operator which permutes the states at nearby sites here. In fact, you very quickly after it was shown that the whole PSL 2.2/4 sector is integrable at one loop, and almost in the same time, people noticed that if you write the dilatation operator, at least, well, they started with SC2 sector because it's simpler. So you can write the dilatation operator at two loops. This is the piece at two loops. There is some piece at three loops. And these people, Beiser, Christiansen, Staudacher, noticed that in some sense, in a perturbative sense, this the integrability is still preserved by these terms. So if it is integrable, then you can do a Betanzas computation. Well, this part is easy to diagonalize. Well, we know the solution since 80 years already. But this, the parts which start to appear here are more and more complicated. You see that here you have a nearest neighbor, next to nearest neighbor interaction, and if you look at the third loop order, you see that more and more spins are involved. So you get a long range spin chain, and it becomes more and more complicated. So it is not obvious how to diagonalize this, but if you take only the first three loop orders, well, you still are able to diagonalize it. Well, we did it with Matthias Staudacher by using the correspondence to some long-range spin chain, which is called Inozemtsev spin chain. So you can write a Betanzas. You can write the result. So this is you can easily obtain the result up to three loop order, and this is in fact this was until recently the only. Well, the only part which is known about perturbative gauge theory, because you have to have some to be able to compare with a true gauge theory computation. So this was compared with a computation did by Sokachev and his collaborators. And also, well, so you can be sure that the dilatation operator up to three loop order is integrable. So there was this comparison with the gauge theory calculation, and also the dilatation operator is more or less fixed up to three loop order by the supersymmetry, by the structure of the permutations, the diagrammatic structure of gauge theory, and so on. But to go beyond the three loop was much more complicated. So it's important to have to know what is beyond to say something sensible about the structure of this dilatation operator. but let's for the moment forget about what may happen at higher loop order, and to see to ask what are the consequences of if so the gauge theory is integrable up to three loop order. So should this is this persisting to higher loop orders or not? So it is very tempting to say to assume that the integrability persists to all loop order, because finally it's a property which is maybe related to the planar limit of the gauge theory. So people made a conjecture about what the solution should be at all loop orders. So the first Beiser, Dippel, and Staudacher proposed a conjecture about for the SU2 sector, and later Staudacher and Beiser gave a more sophisticated conjecture for the whole group. And these conjectures were proven by Beiser last year, using the structure, the supersymmetry, and the properties which general properties which should be obeyed in the case where the length of the operators goes to infinity. So all the things which I am going to speak about take place at for very large long operators. So the conjecture of Beiser, Dippel, and Staudacher is formulated as so you the answer for the dimensions of the operators in SU2 sector should be given by this function, where you have some momenta, some these are called Magnon momenta because of the similarity with the spin chain, where you have some excitations which carry some momenta, and these momenta are solutions of this Bethe-Ansatz equation. For the moment, we'll forget about this factor. So the initial conjecture was with this factor equal to 1. It resembles very much to the Heisenberg Bethe-Ansatz equations, except that U is now the rapidity is now has a more complicated form than what it is for the Heisenberg Bethe-Ansatz, and also the expression of the energy in terms of this moment is a little bit more complicated. Now I switch to, so this was the Hoft coupling constant. Now I use a different a variable for it because it is more convenient. So this equation where sigma equals 1, in fact, surprisingly, they are consequences. Well, you can get this integrable system as a part of the one-dimensional Hubbard model in I think it's you remember that this spin chain in the SU2 sector was having more and more terms of more and more complicated structure, and it was in fact it is surprising that you can formulate you can get all this complicated structure just from a very simple model. So this is I think it is a very interesting structure which is hidden inside this this integrable model, which deserve more attention.
But the magnetic energy is fixed by supersymmetry of their BPS states. That's where reforms. Yeah. Because their BPS states is
what
about the others, especially for U of T? That's also fixed by supersymmetry?
Well, in some sense, yeah. This is, in fact, as a consequence of this work, the energy here has a group theoretical interpretation. So this square root form is a consequence of the supersymmetry, and also this one, yeah. All these are consequences of supersymmetry, and it is strange that they can be obtained by from this model. And it seems that this model has a hidden structure of supersymmetry, which was not really looked at until now. So, okay, but let's. Well, this is, if you want to know, I presented just the SU2 sector to show some simple equations. So these are the equations written by Beisert and Staudacher for the whole group. So this is nested better than that. You have a lot of variables U and V. You have some variable X, which is some double evaluated function of U, and in fact what is really to be mentioned here is that supersymmetry fixes everything except this little piece here, which is this correction, this correction factor, which
this is for the full PSL.
For the full PSL, yes. And what it is important is that it is the same. The structure is the same for gauge theory and string theory. And what was really not fixed was only this tiny part.
Can I ask a related question?
Yeah.
Maybe these are fixed by supersymmetry, but it's not some trivial non-normalization statements that you have contributions in every group order. It seems, is that
all these functions contain G. So these are function of G.
So
of
the how do you go about proving such a statement that it's not just some...
Supersymmetry is here for any coupling constant.
Is there a way to use it?
Yeah.
Supersymmetry
and integrability.
This is assuming it
is enough. Yeah.
And this is
no, no. These are once you assume integrability, it is not a statement about loop by loop order. This is true for the first loop. There you can forget about the rest. But once you get to the second loop, to have integrability, you have it's not order by order. So this is very important. This is a big constraint. We are assuming a very tight constraint on the structures. But let's see what is the consequence. So I said some things about the structure on the strings on the gauge theory side. Now on the string side, the string action is given by a sigma model on some super manifold. It was written down by Metzai and Zeitlin in 1998, and there were many classical solutions which were obtained by Frolov, Zeitlin, and their collaborators in 2002-2003. It was at the time it was solution by solution. So we had many different integrable models. If you want classical integrable models. At more or less at the same time, Joe and his collaborator proved that the classical sigma model is integrable as a whole. Very soon after, the solution of this sigma model was given in the term of explicitly, I would say, in term of algebraic curves by matrix model people, Kazakov, Mashakov, well, Minahan and Zarembo, and also there was a series of work where this the solution of the full sigma model was written in the term of algebraic curves. So this the algebraic curves have a very similar form to what you obtain from the Betansatz equations. When you take the thermodynamic limit, you take many many magnons, if you want. You take the limit where the number of these magnons go to infinity, and you obtain some equations, some curves, and these are very similar to these algebraic curves you get from writing the solution of the sigma model. So it became possible to compute now, to compare not solution by solution the two sides, but to compare the equations, in fact. Yes.
It was exactly the same thing. I guess they were applying a known method. They get a real
surface.
Like they were applying a known method from that field.
Well, I missed his talk, but I think they know very well this methodology. So I think this, yeah. So it became with this work, it became very very easy to compare the two sides of the equations on the two sides. And what it became clear when comparing what you get from the diagonalization up to three loop order, and what they got from the classical sigma model, was that there was a problem starting with a third loop order in this coupling constant. So we were stuck with this problem for at least 2 years. I think it was a miracle that the first two order coincided, because in fact what you look at is not the same regime when you look at perturbative gauge theory and the string theory, because in fact you have this regime in string theory, you have to take lambda to infinity, so you may have an order of limit problem. So the question is, can you have really the full result to be able to take the two orders, two limits independently? So I think what we got 2 weeks ago, it was exactly this interpolating result. So let's come back now to this. To see how you get this interpolating result. So I was speaking about this scalar factor in the Betansatz equations, which was not known, not fixed by the symmetry constraints. So six months ago, approximately, Romuald Janik gave a very wrote a very beautiful paper about the constraints which should be obeyed by this factor. So you on the string side you have a field theory, you have a sigma model, you have a field theory, and in the field theory you especially in the integrable field theory, you know that there is a crossing symmetry which relates scattering between, let's say, particle antiparticle transformation. So if you take the product of this scalar factor for scattering of two particles and one particle and one antiparticle, you get some constraint. So this was for people who are familiar with the integrable field theories. This is how Zamolodchikov wrote the solution for the ON sigma model. They solved this equation, but there the equation was much simpler because this function was a function of the difference of two rapidities. And here it is not the case. It's the Betanzas equation do not depend on the difference of the rapidities, but depend on each rapidity separately. So what is it was very important. This work was very important on the to know which is the constraint with how to write the constraint which is satisfied by the scalar factor. So you have some strange function appearing in the equation. So it's not at all obvious how to solve it. There might be many solutions of this equation which do not correspond to the physical to the physics. So let's see how you can solve this equation. So people tried an ansatz to write this. So this phase, it's sigma is in fact phase factor. So they write it as on the basis of some quantities which appear in the integrable model, which are in fact the conserved quantities for each magnon. So they write it in the form of antisymmetric function of x one and x two with some coefficients. So the problem is how to determine these coefficients, which are functions of g, in fact, of the coupling constant. And you can write these coefficients as a series around the g equals infinity. And the first terms were known by, they were guessed by Ritunov, Frolov, and Staudacher from the classical solution of the sigma model. They are very simple, like this. And the second term was computed by Hernandez and Lopez a few months ago by a one-loop computation in string theory. So they have some not so simple behavior, but still the phase factor with these two terms was verified. People checked that it satisfied this crossing relation to the right order. So people succeeded after several failed tries. So they succeeded to write an expression in terms of you see it here, which satisfies this relation. So this was done by Baizer, Hernandez, and Lopez maybe 2 months ago, or less than this. But they were not able to. Well, this is a, if you want to resum this series to get an explicit expression of theta, where it's not very easy because the series does not converge. It is asymptotic. So you don't know very well what is the mainly what is the behavior at weak coupling, because you want to check what happens at weak coupling. So before explaining more about this this proposal of Bishop Hernandez and Lopez, I will try to come closer to the subject of the last two papers. So, what you can compute explicitly with when once you have the Betanzos equation is some specific conformal dimensions. In principle, the dimension of an operator which is called twist two operator, which is very important in gauge theory. It is also called the cusp anomalized dimension. And, it is an important object such that in QCD people made a very sophisticated calculation to three loop order. They got a very complicated result from which Kotikov, Lipatov, and his collaborator they extracted the n equals 4 result just by looking at this QCD result by some principle which was devised by Lipatov. And also this the dimension of this operator appears in the structure of the gluon amplitudes in super young bees. So if you want more details, Zvi Bern gave a talk 1 year ago here. It was very interesting. I think you find it on the website of KITP. Bern and his collaborators found that there is a very interesting structure in these amplitudes which allows you to express the nth order amplitudes from the one loop amplitude by some exponentiation, some recursive formula, and this number appears there. So if you make a perturbative computation of these amplitudes, you compute this, in fact. And this object is also, you can compute it by if you have the Betanzos. This was done by Eden and Staudacher this year. So this operator belongs to SL2 sector, the non-compact sector of the gauge theory. So you can write the Betanzos equation, you put this factor, whatever it is. And then once you have this equation, you have a big number of magnons here. So you have to take the limit when this goes to infinity. So people who work in Betanzos know that it is possible to solve this equation by taking to write this as an integral equation. We started to write such kind of equations with Matthias 1.5 years ago for the SU11 sector, but it was not very interesting. So you can write it for SU2 sector, and then we saw that SU2 sector is related to Hubbard, and they wrote the equation for SL2 sector, and they ended up to such kind of integral equation. So sigma here is not this sigma, but is density of these solutions, Fourier transform. But so you don't have the U variable here, but you have Fourier transform. So these equations are written in this kernel is not very simple, but not very complicated either. Usually, if you have integrable models, you have delta of t prime. You have difference kernel, because this depends only of the difference of variables, so you get here just a difference kernel. So, here it is a little bit more complicated. You cannot solve this equation directly. You can do it in perturbation theory, for example. So once you have this sigma, you can compute this G dependence of the dimension of the twist two operator. So this is a machine. You feed in Betanzatik, and you get some function at the end. So if you put sigma equals 1, so what was supposed to what we suspected to be the right answer in gauge theory, you get some series in G with some coefficients which are basically zeta functions, and you see that each term has a fixed degree of transcendentality, which is means the sum of argument of zeta functions has some value which is related to the order. So this is called the transcendentality principle, and it was devised by Ipatov. This is the result of Eden and Staudacher. Now they convinced C.V. Bern and his collaborator to do a for loop calculation for this quantity, and the result was so for this the coefficient of the term of the G to the 8. The computation was the result is numerical because the integrals are very complicated, and before getting an exact result, they did it numerically. So this is the numerical value, and this is the value of this number here. And within the error bars, so you see that you have this number, which is different from this one, clearly. So you see that you instead of getting a minus sign here, you get a plus sign. And it's not only this; they had a mean to principle to extrapolate to the fifth loop, although they did not do the calculation, and they saw that the probability coefficient has pluses also. So in the places where Eden and Staudacher had minuses. And in the same time, independently, Eden Staudacher and Beisert Eden and Staudacher understood that what inverts the sign here, if you invert the sign here, in fact, what you get is the sigma factor of Beisert, Hernandez, and Lopez, this one. Sorry? Instead of one, yes. Yeah, it's very strange, really very strange. So, and this, they checked that this factor is crossing symmetric, it contains the string limit, and it reproduces these numbers. So, miracle. So, and they noticed that you have this factor, these functions of G which appear in the quantity sigma. This is the series which was written in the beginning, so around the G equals infinity, the series is asymptotic, and so the series which reproduces the minus which changes the sign of the zeta functions in the result is you take these coefficients, you continue them analytically to negative values of n, and then you make your expansion around the g equals 0 this time. So this is convergent. So the yes.
What are you thought the original
this is
BHL ANSATZ.
Yes.
Is the BHL.
Yes. Yes, this is the BHL ANSATZ.
What is the contingent pattern?
Now, well, the equality you have to check. So the statement was, well, this coefficients reproduce the plus sign single zeta function. So you have to check that this is really an equality, that it is the same the same function. So this is what Beisel checked to 100 loop order numerically, and well, they gave an analytical argument to.
So what you mean is that they did a pi or just a sum the first 100 terms on the right hand side?
Well, let me explain the rest of this transparent. So let's take this part of the equality. So let's suppose that C is defined by this series, which is convergent. You can take here some particular values of R and S, but the argument works similarly for any R and S. So you take the expression of this C's, which is the analytical continuation of this. You have some zetas here, which you write some representation with a sum, and you resum the what you get for any k, and then you get a hypergeometric function. You have some gammas, and you form from the zeta, which was k to some power, you get g over k. So you get a function of j over k, which is a hypergeometric function. And this is there is a very important property which is enclosed here. The singularities of these functions are at z equals 0, infinity, and some value which is 4iz equals 1, I think. Well, the hypergeometric function has singularities at 3 points. So you retrieve here the singularities at g equals minus g squared equals minus 1/16, and in fact minus n squared over 16. And Lipatov knows that there should be singularities at on the imaginary axis at these values, and also they appear in the Hubbard model in some fashion. So this at least the singularity structure of this function, we know that it is right. So you have this function.
These are singularities. G squared equals minus n squared over 16.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Ask Lipatov if he understands from.
We understand it from what?
From gauge theory point of view. Sorry?
What are the words you use?
I think BFKL, some. or some singularities which are. Well, I am not able to reproduce. But he knows that these singularities are there, and we knew that the singularities were there in a related model, which is a Hubbard model. So
because of the exact solution.
From our point of view, it was purely technical. But if you want to have a physical explanation. I think we have to ask Editato. And also, the first singularity was obtained by HP Bern in their computation. They did not know it was there, but it appeared at the right place.
Model
where
the same thing happens and you know what the
bullets
are,
or I guess
it's just completely
mysterious? Or? Well, it's some summation over all orders of I don't know where where they come from. I cannot explain. I don't have any I know I have another explanation let's come back to this formula. So the singularities are in fact somewhere in my talk g becomes g square becomes 2g square because these people change the notations and I copied their formula. So you see that here g singularity is g square equals minus 1 over 8. So it's the point where you see the square root appearing, because this dispersion relation goes through 0. And also there are bound states I did not talk about, but they have the energy n square plus 8 g square sine square. So there are additional singularities where that dispersion relation passes through 0. So maybe these singularities are not so profound here, but it's not a completely crazy result. So once you have this function, which you constructed around z equals 0, you can look at its expansion around z equals infinity. So this is the expansion around z equals infinity. And, you want to to take the sum over k. It is divergent. I told you, but you can regularize it by zeta function regularization. So you take all the sums for each term, and you get some zetas of a negative argument, and you have a definition for zeta of minus n, which is some cosine gamma of z and zeta of z. I think I don't remember exactly the formula, but in any case, you can express these negative values of zeta through the positive values, and the even values disappear, and their derivatives are some numbers, and if you compute these numbers, you reconstitute the series at around g equals infinity. So is this a proof? I don't know. So, but at least it is an argument. And they gave another definition. So now you can take the Eden-Staudacher machine and you put the numbers on one side and you get some kernel on the other side. So you can write very simply the resulting kernel. So if you take the original kernel and you split it in odd and even parts, so if you make t to minus t or t prime to minus t prime, this is even and this is odd. And this part generates the even argument zeta functions so all these pi to some power in the dimension. So now you have two to know what which is the what should you use to generate the odd argument zetas in order to be able to change the sign. And well, they argue that this is the part which generates the odd argument zeta. So you have to take the Eidenstaudacher kernel and to add two times this part in order to get the full kernel. So well, this is the their result. Now we of course everybody wants to make tests of this this proposal, so we are trying to see that really you can get the strong coupling value of the this function which is predicted by string computation using this kernel. So this is what we are doing with Ivan right now. So okay, I will the conclusion of the story is that we have a proposal which can be maybe the answer.
So is it clear from this proposal that the interchange of limits breaks down? Can you see it?
The interchange of well, it was not checked. So of course there are many checks to do, but in principle the chain of arguments says that there should be no contradiction between between strings and gauge theory, but you have to take the right limit. So if you take first the g goes to infinity, you forget about well, some terms, you get one answer, and if you take but this was not verified explicitly. So there are many checks to be done to say that this is the good answer. But until now, it was not really. It was very hard to imagine a function which will give the two limits correctly. So I think it is an important progress. And also we have to understand what is behind this formula, what is the model. Finally, it's not so different from the sigma equal 1 result, which was Hubbard, Hubbard related model. So we have to understand if it is still some very simple there is still some very simple spin chain behind it. And also it would be very interesting to understand what is the relation with the amplitudes that we and the collaborators are computing. Because, what the spin chains see only, well, they are only about dilatation operator, about the conformal dimensions, but we don't know anything about the amplitudes. So there should be some structure in the gauge theory, in the amplitudes, and which makes these recursion relations be there. Yeah. Okay.